and welcome to edition 279 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're here to bring you our review of the Spanish Grand Prix, along with the latest talking points from Formula 1. I am Richard Baxter. With me tonight, we have the NRF1 podcast founder, co-founder, Perry Hamilton.
As co-founder, Rich, I and I'm not even sure it was a 50-50 split. I think Mike shouldered most of that load. But thanks. Hi, it's great to be back. It feels like ages. I think this might be my first one this season.
I think you did one at the start, I think, didn't you?
You were a preview, did I, or what have you? I can't remember. But anyway, it's awesome to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. It's been a while. And also joining us, our F1 fan from south of the border, the ever bullish Katie Sandals.
Hi, guys. This actually is my first one of the season. It's great to be back on the pod with you guys tonight.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys all doing good? Keeping well?
Very, thank you. Yeah. All staying safe, you know, all touch wood, all happy and healthy as we set to lift ease restrictions next week.
Oh, definitely. We'll be back in the pub soon, back in the rush cutter soon, and we'll be sat by that river with the trains going past.
All that background noise that you've been missing from the podcast will be there. The clinking of glasses, the trains, yeah, all of it will be back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know. Some of the background noise we've had recording online, it still has its troubles, but it'll be better background noise, I suppose. But Katie, we need to talk about your little Formula One flex. You've got your accredited source on Wikipedia, right?
I know, this is exciting. I only found this out today because I like to search from time to time. I search my name on Wikipedia, not because I'm cool enough to have a page. I'm not thankful for that yet. But that, you know, my day job is as a journalist. And so if you search your name as a journalist on there, you can find yourself as one of the sources for a Wikipedia page. And I found out today that I'm actually a source on Alex Albon's Wikipedia page from a story I wrote for work.
That's brilliant.
So that's made my day.
That's so good. We might be able to pull some strings and get him on, because he is, of course, an honorary Norfolkian.
I think so.
An honorary Norfolkian who grew up in Suffolk and drives under a Thai license, but we all get there.
Hey, I've made Pierre Gasly an honorary Norfolkian because he's from Rouen, which is Norwich's twin city. So I mean, we make exceptions along the way.
The Gasly thing's actually less tenuous than the Albon thing. If I'm being honest, I'd agree with that more. I think we should just claim anyone that's East Anglian. I think we should just claim the whole of East Anglia, which everyone knows Norfolk is the capital of. But just all of East Anglia.
I'm not contractually allowed to say that, so
I'm not allowed to say it or agree with you.
My bosses, I can't agree with that contractually. Thank you.
It's right. They're all folk anyway. It's, you know, whether they're north or south, it's all folk. That's what it counts as. So
true.
We'll pull it in that way. I suppose we should probably crack on and talk about the Spanish Grand Prix, which was the weekend just gone, and. I could be wrong saying this, but I kind of thought for a Spanish Grand Prix, it was actually pretty decent. It was all right.
I think so.
I've seen it described everywhere as not as boring as I thought, which is the highest praise, I'm sure.
That's annoying. Someone's stolen the name of my autobiography. that's what I was going to call it. But yeah, absolutely. But the thing is about those kind of races, you go in with a low expectation. Like you never expect much from a Spanish Grand Prix. But the thing is, even like the TV crew and the commentators and stuff, they're already, like when they're doing the early morning prep before quali's even got underway, they're already doing their bit to be like, at a track that is historically hard to pass and all of that stuff. And you're just kind of like, well, they're trying to set my expectations low already. Hmm. So, you know, and I suppose it's tough for them, because if they bowl out going, we're going to have an action-packed wheel-to-wheel racing sit and it doesn't happen, then they've just made targets to themselves, haven't they? But yeah, it's that, you know, set my expectation low, under-promise, over-deliver. And that, I think, is exactly what the Spanish Grand Prix did.
Yeah. And to be fair, it wasn't the most action-packed race. But what made it exciting was the strategy. And it was just a lot of big brain people with big strategy calls, really we have to say, from the Mercedes side. But it was great to see the two front-running teams taking two different strategies and still having a close race.
So, can I just ask both of you a question here and be honest? Because I did it, and I'm putting myself under the bus here. When Verstappen had his slow pit stop, and then Merck didn't pit Hamilton straight away to get him track position, did you think they've made the wrong choice here? Because I did, and I was just like, and I said, and Rich, you're going to have to bleep this, but I said out loud, they fucked it. And I said, oh, what have they done? They fucked it. And I mean, I will happily say I was wrong, you know, and I was. But sorry, were you just typing down the timestamp of when I just swore there, Rich?
Yeah, exactly that with my really loud keyboard.
I could hear your keyboard typing in the background. Sorry, I'll try not to swear in future.
No, that's fine. But, swear all you like because I can write it down and it's easy to find in the edit, and I can just go add it in. So 5:37 swear written down. All good.
Lovely. So I was like, for me, it was the obvious cause and effect. So, you know, Red Bull are traditionally very quick. They probably count on their pit stops being very quick. That factors into their strategy. It's why they practice it so much. If they have a slow pit stop, like if a Williams comes in and is stationary for 4 seconds, well, that's probably only a second more than they were expecting or we were expecting. If a Red Bull stationary for 4 seconds, like that's twice as long as they normally want to be standing still. Mm. So that's had an impact. So I was fully expecting Merck to go, this is a godsend. Let's jump in. Let's make the car, as you know, even if the tyres hit the cliff at the end of it, let's make sure that we can keep our elbows out and let's go with it. But so, yeah, did you guys think that as well? Did you react in the same way, or were you both way more intelligent than me?
No, I think I was definitely on the same wavelength. You're right. It's not a good Red Bull pit stop. You know, as well as like a technical point with it, you could always kind of exploit confidence as well. And if you can start shaking up somebody like Verstappen, we've seen in the past what can happen if you shake him up too much, it didn't go well. But you know, you can kind of get inside their heads, and I think there could have been a bit of a mind game to be played. But then, you know, playing devil's advocate, you could have said, well, staying out there ended up playing a bigger mind game with them, because they're like, well, surely, you know, we've made this mistake. Why aren't they coming in? Why aren't they coming straight after us? I don't know. I think there was kind of an element of like playing mind games as well with it, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree. Actually, I completely thought they got the call wrong. When they put that graphic on the screen, it was like Hamilton 80-something% chance of overtake. It's like, right, you have to pit him. That's, you know, everything about you is saying that's the right time, go for it. And he was right behind Verstappen when Verstappen came in the pits. So he probably would have overtaken him down the straight with DRS if he got a good exit and everything out of the chicane and the last corner. But then obviously Verstappen came in the pits and you think, right, this is your moment. If you're quick, take advantage. Slow pit stop all helped. And you think, do it. And then I think they went past and then they did another lap, and it was the graphic was getting lower and lower, the percent of overtake. And I think I think Hamilton got stuck behind Mazepin for a few corners. Sorry, I have to say he who shall not be named. I actually said his name. Oh my gosh.
There was that great comment, wasn't there, from Toto Wolff? This guy makes us lose the position. And I remember some of the commentators saying they'd never heard, because it wasn't Wolff to Hamilton or anything. It was to race control, and they broadcast that, and they don't usually broadcast those messages. So I don't know what the motivation in broadcasting that was, but it was very interesting to kind of hear that note from Toto that we don't often hear.
Yeah, it was really good radio. Well,
really good.
Yeah.
Also, Rick, we mentioned just as a quick sidebar, since we're talking about radio as an additional feature that they're broadcasting. There was a couple of years ago, there was a tweet that you put out that said, come on, F1, we are way past needing picture-in-picture.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously now, you'll be watching the race, and then on the side, on the timing screens, if there's an overtake happening, they go picture in picture. So I'm pretty sure you made that happen, mate.
Yeah, we've had a few things on the NRF1 podcast. The picture in picture thing.
Kyle created the current tyre usage process. You've gone picture in picture. I mean, we're just making Formula One better, mate, overall. But sorry, that's a complete sidebar. The other thing that I had in mind then, so following on from that strategy piece where I was then like, why haven't you brought Hamilton in? He would have got the overtake, he would have got the track position. So they obviously know more than I do. So what I did, and this, you might say what I think you might say, but that's fine. So when it became apparent to Red Bull that Lewis was going to catch and therefore overtake Verstappen, when he overtook Verstappen, at that point, they had a pit stop window more between them and third place. So that was when Verstappen was like, right, stick the fresh boots on or the scrub softs on or whatever, and go for the fastest lap. So try and mitigate the points differential by getting that extra point. So here's my question then. Instead of doing that and waiting until Verstappen got past, knowing that Lewis was catching, but that his tyres were that much, why didn't they pit Verstappen and get Verstappen out on a set of newer, faster tyres? So knowing that he'd be behind Hamilton, but giving him enough laps to catch him. So why didn't they do kind of a later version of what Lewis did after the first run of pit stops? Is it because they didn't have a fresh set of tyres or a pair of tyres that they trusted to get them to the end of the race? Or am I just misunderstanding how that strategy would work? Somebody help me.
I'm not sure what the gap to Bottas was, because Bottas stayed out for a while.
I don't think
they were safe to Bottas. So if that was the case, they would have said, all right, Bottas is now leading. And
so that's it, because they only became safe to Bottas when Bottas pitted to get his fresh boots to do the fastest lap.
Yeah.
Right. And that was only because Bottas was clear through to, was it Checo in fourth?
No, it was Leclerc in fourth.
That's right. It was Charles Leclerc, wasn't it? Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Okay, so, well, I've answered my own question there, just by being stupid. But I was, you can tell I was fully swept along on the crest of the enjoyable wave that was this strategic, slow burn. I mean, if it was a film, it would have been like a Tom Clancy thriller. Like, just that slow burn, wasn't it, towards the end? And then it all just built up, and it was...
Making that film comparison, I was just thinking while we were talking there, it just kind of felt almost like Jaws, like Verstappen was trying to swim away, and he could just see Hamilton kind of getting closer and closer in his mirrors. There was also this comparison made, and I think it was directly made on, speaking about radio again, directly made on the radio, this is going to be Hungary 2019 all over again. And it kind of really was in many aspects, you know, that good sort of rare good start for Verstappen. He isn't always the master of starts, but when he nails it, he nails it. And then he became that kind of sitting duck for Hamilton in the end. And I was like, that is a very good comparison. And I think, I don't know, if they hadn't learned something from that last time, was there anything they could have brought in this time? You know, obviously different track and different conditions and whatever, but I don't know. It just an interesting comparison that was made on the day.
Yeah, definitely. And something that, of course, didn't help Red Bull and Verstappen was Sergio Perez's form. Do you think it's a case of different day, same dilemma for Red Bull? Because they're really, you know, they keep saying they need their second driver to be up there to support. And, I mean, this weekend, Perez wasn't really there. I think he qualified... He had a difficult qualifying. I think it was eighth he started in.
Yeah.
Because he said he had a shoulder injury he was kind of nursing through. But then in the race he was fifth, and he never really had the chance to make things difficult for Mercedes. He finished behind a Ferrari in the end. Do you think that's part of the problem that Red Bull have?
I think it's a very difficult seat to take on under any circumstances. We've seen very different drivers with very different skill sets struggle over the years to kind of be that effective. We all know they're going to be second driver. Anybody who's getting into that position knows they're going to be a second driver. But I don't know. Obviously Perez had more experience than Alex Albon. And that was, you know, kind of one of the reasons why they put their weight behind him. But I do wonder if there is almost like a curse to that second seat. You know, they're never going to live up to those expectations. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about him at some point. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about Bottas being this, that and the other. And should he be replaced mid-season or whatever. And Red Bull are obviously the kings of doing that. But I don't know. I just... I don't know. I don't know who. I wonder, even just thinking about it now, like as you were speaking, Rich, how would Hamilton fare as second driver? We're asking questions today. How would Hamilton fare as a second driver in that Red Bull seat? Would he, you know, how would that work? Would he, is there like a psychological disadvantage to being the second seat at Red Bull, which kind of has its impact on these drivers? What is it? Because Perez is clearly a very capable driver, but just doesn't seem to get near that top three.
Yeah, it's obviously it's still, we're still only, what, the fourth race into the season? So it is obviously still very early in his Red Bull career as well. He's shown glimpses, Perez has, but he's also had moments where you know he should be higher than he is. So he's obviously found it difficult at times. But it's a really strange one. I think, I mean, if you asked Hamilton to go into that second seat, I mean, I don't think he'd want to play second fiddle at any moment. He'd want the best. But I mean, I don't know. Did Mark Webber put a curse on the seat when he left? Was that his? Should we blame Webber?
Ricardo came after him, didn't he?
He's probably the best one in that second seat.
Mm. Yeah, he kind of took it to Vettel, wasn't it, at the time? So.
But then effectively, I think if anyone cursed the second seat, it's Max, because Max was not brought in as the number one. At the time, Ricardo was the number one, and Max was brought in as the number two and just grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and never let it go. So in theory, it's almost like Max walked up to his seat, scrubbed out the number two and wrote number one next to it in Sharpie and then never looked back. So if anyone cursed the number two seat, it's Max Verstappen. So really what they want to do is they want to put a true number one in the other car, because that's always been the number one car. Fight me. That's
so
my theory.
What you're saying is Red Bull should be cloning Max Verstappen.
Yeah, that is exactly right.
I'm going to write that down as a note and tweet that at Christian Horner.
Yeah, clone him. And it's totally not illegal. And
unethical at all, yeah.
No, that's fine.
We've solved Red Bull's problems there, boys.
Of course.
Genius. And you mentioned Bottas as well, actually. We need to pick up on these rumours which are swirling around. And we have in previous podcasts thrown fuel onto the fire, because we have talked about this. Now, Bottas has had a difficult start to the season. What are your guys' opinions? Do you think he will be replaced at Mercedes? And if so, when? Would it be halfway through the season, end of the season, or...
Right.
Next.
So I'm glad you brought this up, Rich. So I want to give credit here to our he's in the podcast text group, but he's not been on a podcast yet. Adam. And it's actually Adam's dad who said the phrase, and I think somebody else has said it in the past. It's probably not an unfamiliar thing, but he said, "Bottas, great driver, not a great racer." And that is how I feel about Bottas. And the thing that summed that up for me this weekend was his engineer sounded like he was having to cheerlead him along for the opportunity to win that race. Now, you flip that round and you put Hamilton in that position, and Hamilton's going to be the one saying to his engineer, "What's going to be my gap to Max? How high can I get? What do I need to do to win this race?" Bottas isn't saying that. His engineer is having to say to him, "Come on, keep your head up. You can still get Max. You can still get this. You can still win this race. You can do whatever." Now, if you're a true racer, if you've got the Merc underneath you, you shouldn't have to have your engineer telling you that. And Toto. This should be your absolute killer instinct. 100%. You should be going for the win. Now, to come out after the race and have some petty little gripe about, "I've already told you I'm not moving out of the way anymore." Mate, if you don't want to be told to move out of the way, be faster.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the same theory towards running up the score, you know, in games. You don't want me to score more? Stop me. And yeah, different strategies, absolutely fine. I get that completely. But, you know, be the racing driver that means you get the prime strategy. Be the racing driver that means the team is investing in you. He's not. And the amount of times that the media have tried to sell us Valtteri 2.0, "Oh, he's completely different this year. Oh, he's got a beard this year. Oh, he's been working out more this year." I'm sick of it. I'm bored of it. But I don't think Merck will get rid of him, because he is... the perfect number two driver. And at the moment, they don't need another number one. I think that Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton season, where Nico won the world championship, even though Mike Bailey said it would never happen, and I will take every opportunity to remind Michael of that. Mike Bailey said it would never happen, and it did. But I think that season was probably the most stressful season behind the scenes at that organisation, because the whole idea, and I think it was, you go back to, and I cannot remember, it might have even been Stefano Domenicali, but I don't think it was. It was one of the higher-ups at... in fact, it might have been top guy himself at Ferrari, when they were talking about having both, like, Seb and Alonso, or Seb and Kimi at Ferrari, and he said, you don't have two roosters in one hen house. And that was the phrase, you don't have two roosters in one hen house. And I think the more you do it, historically, look back throughout Formula One and find an occasion where a team had two top tier world championship contending drivers and it was harmonious and successful long term. You cannot, because it does not exist. And I think whether that's because that's how Formula One is structured, whether or not the lack of parity, which I know they're looking to discuss with a potential salary cap or what have you, but you just can't do it. So as far as Merck are concerned, they're going to say all the right things. Hey, you know, we want Valtteri to be successful. Our guys are free to race, blah, blah, blah. It's not true. The truth is, Lewis is their golden goose. Lewis is their cash cow. Lewis is the greatest racing driver to ever step behind a wheel in the modern era. Absolutely agree with that. You don't need someone to come in and challenge him. You need someone that can just let him do what he does. Valtteri does enough to put that Merck on the podium and to steal a win when Lewis isn't on form. That's all you need him to do. And he'll do that for a decent enough price. I don't think he's going anywhere. Rant over. Sorry, guys.
No, that's really good points you made there. What about you, Katie? Do you think they'd get rid of Bottas?
I love the comment that was made that that's not what we do. That's what the other team does.
Yeah, there were shots fired there.
Love the absolute shade. So much drama. Love it. But I don't know. I guess I sort of interpreted Bottas's form in a slightly different way to Ped, in that it's kind of like, I don't know if his confidence has been knocked. I mean, it can't be fun sat in that car week after week next to, you know, like Ped said, like the greatest driver of the modern era, at least, if not more. Like, it's like being sat next to like a sibling that does well at school all the time, and you're constantly handing in your work and getting a scene like, oh, why can't you be more like Lewis? I don't know, does that knock you after a time? Do you lose the passion for it? Because, you know, you are driving in the best formula in the world, and you should be like so excited to be there, unless you're Kimi Räikkönen and you can have an exception card, but you know, you should be loving every sort of minute of it. And I don't know, he just seems bored with it. Like, it's he's had enough of being Lewis's sideman, and I think he's got the talent, you know, on a good light day, like you said, you know, when Lewis isn't at 100%, but he's had the kicked out of him too many times, perhaps, to keep caring. And with all these rumours, they do start playing on your head, I'm sure. Like, even if Toto tells you 9 times out of 10 that he would never replace you, there's always that part of you that goes, yeah, but would he? And but sort of kind of playing on from what you said, Ped, there was that idea of replacing him with Russell. I think Russell is too ambitious, perhaps. If we're following kind of your way of thinking, I think he's too ambitious to sit next to Hamilton. He will push as hard as he can every weekend to squeeze every ounce of what isn't the best car on the grid, and everyone's more than willing to accept it's not. And the look of utter like despair on his face last season when he got that chance and it just all came apart from him. I don't know. I think they want a real kind of Lewis to leave on his own terms, and there was discussion over him wanting to get his contract sorted in good time this year, which was interesting.
Yeah, I think he wants it done by the summer break was the headline I saw, I think. And I am completely with you. I think the idea of having George Russell in that number two, because George Russell came in and easily hung with Valtteri. So give him 4 or 5 races and I think he'll be outperforming Valtteri.
In a car that fits him,
exactly right. But I think because Russell is, and I think I popped this into our chat, Russell's such a top tier talent that if he doesn't get a shot with a bigger team soon, or at least in a more competitive car, Merck are going to lose him. He's going to find a way out of that developmental contract he's in, that developmental agreement that he's in, and he will go to a team that can offer him the opportunity to succeed. Because if he can do this in a Williams, imagine what he could do in a McLaren. You know, not even a Merck. Imagine what he could do in an Alpine, an Aston. Like, it's crazy to think that what he could get out of a car that's even supposed to be mid-tier, because he is such a talent. And I saw a comment from someone online, and it was after the Bottas-Russell crash at the last race. Sorry, the one before. And, you know, the guy said, Russell's a liability at Williams, not because he's a bad driver, but because he has to, in order to get the positions that he's in, he has to drive that Williams on the wrong side of the ragged edge. And ultimately, that's going to end to either a failure mechanically or a failure in the engine, because the car's not able to, like, he's ragging it, literally ragging the crap out of it. And the car can't stand up to it. And that's what, but it, he doesn't know any other way to drive. So he's almost driving the wheels off of it. And that's why he ends up either having to retire or he ends up having these little collisions and knocks. So I think that's the only worry, is that I think if anybody's going to jump into that seat other than Valtteri, it's George. But I think the reason they give it to him is not, hey, we need someone more competitive, we need someone who can push Lewis. But it's, sugar, if we don't, we might lose him.
Yeah.
And I think he's too good a talent to lose.
I think that's the big, that's going to be the big deciding thing, really, with what happens. And I think I'd love to see George in that car, just to see another British driver given his chance at the front of the grid. And it would be great to see. And I think, and I hope what Mercedes would do is put George in the Bottas Mercedes and say, just take a couple of seasons, get up to, you know, get used to the car, get to know the team, learn from Lewis along the way, kind of, you know, learn what you can, because it's not going to be too long before Hamilton probably retires, you'd expect. And then you've got George hopefully then ready to step in and be the number one.
Should we make some more podcast dreams come reality? Does anyone want to predict when Hamilton will decide to retire? Let's see if we can make this one. Let's see if we can get this one right.
Hang on. Yeah, I will happily predict when he's going to retire. 2020. No, it's not. Sorry, 2030.
I was confused for a second. I was
I confused myself. 2030. I think he's got another 9 years in him.
So he'd be 45 then.
I reckon if anyone's going to be able to do it, he's going to be able to do it. We are now seeing the culmination of the first true generation of super science athletes. People that have, from a young age. It's exactly the same reason why people thought, oh, Cristiano Ronaldo's hit 32. He's going to slow down. He's going to miss a step. Absolutely not. He's still one of the greatest footballers on the planet. And the reason is that they have been looking after themselves in every single way that is physically possible since the get-go. It's not, oh, now I'm old and I'm a bit beat up, now I've got to start training. No. It was, I've been training since day one. I've been healthy since day one. I've been looking after myself since day one. I don't think Lewis Hamilton will miss a step until he's mid-40s. And even then, I think he talks a good game about, I've got other interests, I've got this, that, and the other. His passion is racing. And I think he will go down the route of going all the way through. I mean, you know, Schumacher was racing in his 40s, not because they thought he could win races, but the wealth of his experience and also, a German legend driving for a newly acquired German-branded team was a marketing paradise. Could Lewis Hamilton, you know, go back to a middle tier UK team with the opportunity to bring his experience with them? Yeah, I think if he keeps the passion, then absolutely. I think he's got another 9 years in him, easily.
You know, I just looked and Kimi Raikkonen is 41 and he doesn't look like he's going anywhere soon.
Exactly.
So that's not a bad shout. Maybe he's not going to retire that soon. Okay, I'll take that.
I don't think he's... But the press loves to paint him, because he doesn't come out and go, I am Mr. Formula One. I'm only ever Formula One. I only do Formula One. I don't do anything else. I'm just Formula One. And I'll answer all the questions that you want me to answer in the way you want me to answer them. Because he doesn't do that, people look at him and go, oh, he's a Renaissance man. Oh, he wants this. Oh, he's more interested in designing clothes. He's more interested in making rap music. He's more interested. Let me tell you something. If somebody came to you and said, I know you're really awesome at the one thing that the thing that you do to make a living, but are you interested in clothing design? Actually, do you know what? Yeah, I have been interested in that. I've always been interested in that. I've always had some wicked ideas for clothes. Sweet. Do you want to do that? You'd say yes. Like, do not sit in your ivory tower and think that you would turn down those opportunities. If you've always had a passion for making music and your day job has given you the opportunity to make music on the side and not care about whether it's successful financially, but to be able to express yourself creatively, do not sit there and tell me, no, I wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it on principle, mate. Bugger off, you wouldn't do it. Of course you'd do it. Of course you'd do it. And we sorry, I'm getting really angry. we vilify this guy and turn him into something because he's not the classic. Let me tell you something. Jackie Stewart had other interests. It was called Booze and Women. Right?
Do you mean James Hunt?
I mean all of them, mate. I mean all of them. I mean all of them. And you know what I'm talking about. Not because you weren't there or anything, but you know. To say we had no other interest is absolute tripe. Wraith, I mean, look at
good example.
At Graham Hill.
Look at us. Look at us. We have our day jobs. We do our day jobs. But we're still here bringing a podcast because we love it.
Exactly. Because we can. Because we can, because we love it, because I love having a soapbox that I can preach from. I'm going to shut up.
And we love hearing you.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I'm not sure everyone does, but.
Well, if they don't, they know what they can do. And it's not tell us. No, I'm joking. But how did we get to here? Bottas, that's where we came from.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was my fault for prodding Ped too much.
That's all right. It's,
you asked for a prediction. I gave you one. Amber,
you did. You gave me everything and more. I think it'll be in... I'm going to give him another 5 years. I'd give it 26. Because I think he, at some point... I don't think he'll start his own team, but I think he'll... I know he's very keen on kind of helping the kids be like him, and I wonder at some point he might go off and do that for a bit, but I can also see him kind of coming back into a team and being more of like a technical advisor, or maybe taking that kind of role to stay within racing. He's not going to do like a button and move off into commentary and things like that, because that's not really his kind of style, but I could see him being kind of like a Niki Lauda in the future.
I think you're spot on. I think media is not for him. I don't think he'd be interested in that. I actually think he seems, often in his interviews, seems quite shy and a little bit not willing to engage, a little bit hesitant. I think that's quite right.
He's had enough of the media, I think. Being a member of the press, I think he's had enough of the media.
So here's the question then. He has set up this X44, whatever it is, which is the Extreme E cross-country racing team. You guys are all familiar with this? What about being part of an ownership group that owns Formula One? That owns a Formula One team, yeah, as part of an ownership group there. We know he's huge on representation. He's huge on providing equal opportunities within the sport. What better way of getting representation than to have ownership in a team that can offer those opportunities? Maybe that's what we'll see the transition become.
I'd love to see it. Obviously, Alain Prost did it. Had his own team in the 90s. I'd love to see Hamilton have his own team.
All remember how wildly successful they were.
I remember Nick Heidfeld Panis?
Or I was about to say, I'm sure Olivier Panis was driving a Prost when he crashed and broke his legs.
Oh, jeez, I don't know.
I know it was Panis who broke his legs. It was Olivier Panis who broke his legs. And I'm pretty sure he was driving one of the blue Prosts that had the Gitana's sponsorship on it.
Probably. That sounds right.
Then let's go with it. Someone can Google it and tell me if I'm wrong. I don't mind. How do they tell me I'm wrong if they want to Google it, Rich?
Well, there's several ways. And
we call that a segue in the business.
I love it. And people can let us know their thoughts on the whole Bottas rumours as well, and Verstappen cloning as well. All of it. let us know your thoughts. there's many ways to get in touch with us, Ped. Do you know where the best place to start is?
No, tell me.
Patreon.com/NRF1, where you will find the full edition of this podcast, including our Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. And they are coming up shortly if you're listening on Patreon. And social media, you can follow us on there. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Real easy. The handle for all three is at TheNRF1. And you can email us as well. Although I'll be honest, I haven't checked the email address, but the email is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Send us an email that Rich won't read.
God bless you, Rich.
At least you're honest, buddy.
Hey, I'll try.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Woo.
Okay. Moving on, we have to go through some quick news quickly. That's worded badly, but, you know, deal with it. The FIA has announced today that it's going to be clamping down on, I put this in inverted commas, flexible rear wings. Basically, they said due to certain allegations from drivers and teams, I think mainly Hamilton about Red Bull, but, you know, that basically they're going to be introducing some new rear wing tests, and they'll come in to place from the 15th of June. So teams potentially going to have to change the design of the rear wing on their car. We'll see. And I think the only other news recently was basically the testing of the 18-inch rim tyres. That's been going on currently with some testing. So, yeah, I think that's the only other news.
It's surprising because usually when I'm ahead, there's some big breaking news that we get like halfway through recording the podcast, and then suddenly somebody announces they're leaving the team and we're all thrown into disarray usually.
Yeah, I've been rapidly refreshing all the F1 news sites. But
someone do something.
Come on, Katie's here. It's got to happen. It's got to happen. Someone's got to be off to a different seat. Come on.
So those 18 inches, are they... Is the wheel itself bigger, or is it just the tyre is bigger?
I think it's
the wheel, isn't it?
Yeah, the actual wheel. So the tyre has less of a sidewall, essentially. Right, so it's like a low-profile tyre you'd have on a road car.
So the most exciting thing about that is that we get it approved and we get them on the AlphaTauri for this season. Those in white are going to look so clean.
Yeah.
So clean.
I'm just waiting for someone to have spinners. But no, they put...
Too much extra weight, mate. There's no aero benefit to it, so they won't do it. But I wanted to talk about the wing, actually, if that's all right.
Go for it.
When will the FIA actually start to employ intelligent people? Because what happens is the FIA get together and they write down a load of rules and a load of technical specs and say, your car must fall within this. And then a load of really clever people, mainly Adrian Newey, but really clever people, get together for their respective teams and go, well, if it says this, but we do it this other way, we're not technically breaching the regulation. We found a way to work within the spec that actually gives us an advantage. And then the FIA go, we didn't see that coming. Crap. Well, they've got an advantage now. Crap. Have got an advantage by doing it within the rules, fine. If the rule explicitly says it must not do this and they've breached that rule, penalise them. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, I get you. It does make sense, and it seems strange that halfway through a season they're going to suddenly change the tests.
Exactly.
For the wings, and it could have a massive effect. We really don't know.
So my statement here is, FIA, break the bank and employ someone like Adrian Newey and go, mate, these are the specs. I'm going to give you 6 months to just plan your way around them. I'm going to just try and break them.
Try and break these specs for the upcoming year. Think of every way around it that any of your peers might try and do, and then we are ahead of the game. So let's be proactive about this. Let's not be reactive. Or let's just come out and say it's within the rules. And if you don't like it, Mercedes, get your ass back to the drawing board and design one yourself. Let's do that.
What if it's a team that doesn't have that much money? They come up with this idea and they're suddenly told by a team with a lot more money, we don't like your idea, even though it's better. We're going to find a way that it breaks the rules. So you're going to have to spend a load more money that you don't have fixing a part that wasn't a problem in the first place until we opened our mouths.
Yes, nailed it. Nailed it. That is exactly it. And you can go back. You can look at you can look at DAS from last season. Yeah. Look at the F-duct on the old McLaren, which was just super simple engineering, didn't breach any regulations, but one car had it, the others didn't. That car was deemed to have an unfair advantage. Screw that. It's not unfair. They've just got the right people working for them. It's that old... argument, I think it's one of my friends had, and I don't know if he got it from somewhere else, but it's just like, allow drugs in the Olympics, because I want to see how fast someone can run when they are juiced the F up. You know, let people take as many performance-enhancing drugs as they can, as long as they sign on knowing what the risks are. But I'm not saying that we do that. What I'm saying is, you've given people a set of regulations to say that, to go, and if you were to be like, okay, guys, here's the law, and the law says that you can't do this, this, and this, and you actually found that people weren't breaking the law, but they were kind of being very successful by skirting very close to the edge, you'd then go, well, now we're just going to change it. But like, no, you can't just change it. You can't just change it. It needs to go through votes, needs to be all of that stuff. Anyway, so that's, I don't know anything about making laws, as has probably just become very apparent. But the point I'm making is, you've got these regulations out there. You can't just arbitrarily change them because somebody is doing something that you didn't foresee them doing, and you wonder that it might be making you look a bit like a mug.
Can I just add to that quickly?
Please.
Like, this is F1. We want the best of the best, and that's in drivers, that's in engineers, that's in all the technical team behind. If they're making, leaps forward by doing something very simple that, makes a great impact on their team, we want them to be pushing the boundaries. Okay, that we want people who think outside the box in this sport. We don't want people who just tick boxes for a living, We want people to go, okay, this is what the rules say, but we could do it in a different way. Let's keep moving. Let's keep progressing. And that's, that's what this sport is all about. It's harder, faster, stronger. And it's like, just, I don't know. It just feels like tattletaling. And I learned as a
yes.
kid, that's not a very nice thing to do. Mm-hmm. Just, mm-hmm. we want to be progressive. We want to encourage people to move forward, because if we don't, we get people copying up each other because they can't think of anything better to do that's in the rules.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Too much today.
We'll see what happens, and hopefully it won't change things too much. But we need to look ahead to Monaco, the next Grand Prix. Now they say it's the one of the jewels in the crown. It's a phenomenal race circuit. Layout. Okay, it's a phenomenal track layout. I'm leaving the word race out because we have Ped here, and if I say Monaco is a race, he will prove me wrong.
I won't. It is a race circuit. Is it an effective, compelling, safe Formula One race circuit? I don't believe so. But that is a personally held opinion that I have shared many times on this podcast.
But that's all good. But I mean, looking ahead to the race, to be honest, I think everyone does. We expect it to be more of the same, with pole position essentially being the race decider. Do you think it's going to happen any other way?
Anything can happen. I was saying to you, Rich, before we started, I was talking to my dad beforehand, and we were talking about, is it Monaco 88? Where it looked like such a clean-cut victory for Senna. They put a message through on the radio. He takes his attention away from it for like a second. He crashes and the whole race is on its head. Like, anything we can go on and on about how boring some races can be. And yeah, there are really boring races. I agree with you. But I think we were surprised that this past weekend wasn't boring, as boring as we thought it would be. And anything can happen in F1, I think. I think if you fully give up on that idea, then you kind of lose a bit of the magic of F1.
Yeah,
that's my box to stand on.
Let me be clear. I don't have a fraught relationship with Monaco because I think it's boring. It's not because I think it's a boring race. I think it's because it can be dramatically exciting, but I think that drama is generated, and you've said it yourself, clean cut victory, took his attention away, crashed. The FIA relies on collisions and crashes for drama at Monaco. They'll never admit that publicly, but they've done nothing to evolve that track to make it suitable for modern cars. And the only drama really that comes in that race is from collisions and crashes. And I don't think that that is the way that racing should be done. And it's a personal thing. There are boring races out there because no one's allowed to pass. Yeah, I completely agree. But for me, it just sits as one of those races where everything that we try to do for driver safety, just goes out the window. Because they give us so much money and it generates so much income that we'll never not race there. We'll put it under the banner of history. We'll say that it's history and that'll give us a nice excuse to do it. But the truth be told, the only reason I find that that race gets exciting is when something goes wrong, not because it can facilitate good racing. And I don't want to get a positive only because there's been a negative. I think there's better ways to do it.
No,
that's my box. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't want, just for the record, I don't want the excitement to a race to come from someone getting hurt.
No, of course. I'm not saying that's what you're after.
I don't know. I still like it. We were talking about interesting things that happen, of course, at Monaco as well. We were all talking about Kimi's yacht moment as well. Yeah. That came from a bad thing, but it was still like... It was still a moment that none of us could stop talking about before recording the pod. I don't know. I think it's still an interesting race, and I think that, there are still times when people surprise you and they do manage some sort of overtaking manoeuvre, and we have all the more respect, in a safe way, and we have all the more respect going, well, we didn't think that was possible on this course because we have this preconceived idea of what Monaco is. But I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they'll surprise us.
Let me just put the shine on my hypocrisy here as well, though. Having said all that, if someone was to say to me, "Do you want an expenses paid trip with a pit pass to Monaco?" I would bite their hand off at the elbow. Clear there. They would be drawing back a bloodied stump. Like, I am not saying that I am going to boycott this race. And chances are, if it's on, I'll watch it because I do love the sport. But at the same time, I'm not bothered if I miss it. It's not one that I'm going to set my alarm for and have to sit and watch. As you can imagine, I'm devastated they've taken Canada off the track, off the circuit this year. But, that's one that I'd set my watch by. Monaco, I'll quite happily catch it, get it on catch up. Like that. And if I see a spoiler that tells me who won, I'll be like, oh, that's who won. Okay, that's fine. I won't watch it then. Like, I wouldn't be devastated by that because there's a lot of pomp and circumstance around it, but it doesn't hold the mystery, the mystique, the magic for me as much. But that being said, I'm sure it'll be a cracking race, and I'm sure everyone will really enjoy it. So,
and on that note, who would you say is the most important weekend for?
I'm sorry if this sounds like a broken record and if this has been the most important weekend for this person for every race, but it's got to be Checo Perez, because this is, as we've just said, this is the kind of track where track position at qualifying will often equate to your finishing position in the race, strategy and pit stops all going well. Checo can put that car maybe even front row, second row, third position, and get a podium out of this. That will go such a long way to cementing his position at Red Bull, to easing the woes and the worries of the higher ups at Red Bull, to boosting his own confidence. It's got to be Checo for me.
Yeah, sharp. Casey?
I think it's going to be an important weekend for Verstappen, because obviously, Hamilton is now, 3-1 up on him? He's got to kind of prove that it wasn't kind of a spark at the end of the season, where he could make that difference and he could, take that first place. He needs to kind of pick himself up, dust himself off and go, right, like you say, if he doesn't get that track position, it could be a very difficult weekend. So I think he needs to go out, he needs to show Hamilton, he needs to kind of set him off edge even a little bit and go, oh, okay, this is what Max is bringing this weekend. And we know Hamilton does enjoy that, but Max really needs to kind of stamp his foot down again and say, I'm not going to let you run away with this. Because if this keeps kind of happening race after race after race, it gets to a point where Hamilton just runs away with it all, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And I think the big positive we can take with the Monaco Grand Prix is at least that nobody can argue about any of the track limits. So we know we're gonna avoid that. But I think that is everything wrapped up. There's been a lot we've talked about, and a lot of opinions and ideas thrown around, including cloning Max Verstappen, which I think is genius. But we'll have plenty more to come, which will be with E280, which will be our next episode, our Monaco Grand Prix review. In the meantime, I'm pretty sure that's everything wrapped up. So thank you, Ped and Katie, for joining me. It's been a good one.
Oh, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm really sorry. I feel I've been very ranty. Maybe I shouldn't leave it so long between coming on because I just build up all this angst. But really, I do love it, and it's good fun. Thanks for having us on, Rich. I just really appreciated it.
Yeah, cheers, Rich.
No, it's really good to have you guys, and have we've got such a good pool of people on the podcast program, and it changes quite often. I think it's bloody brilliant.
You and me both, pal. You and me both.
Awesome. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.